Welcome to the Money Wise Women Show, brought to you by MoneyMorphosis.com. Are you ready to be inspired to upgrade your financial skills? Listen to feminine leaders sharing practical advice and valuable insights. Shift your money mindset, improve communication skills, and learn financial management tips. Although we do not provide investment advice, you can check out MoneyMorphosis.com. That's Money-MorphosisCom to find simple ways to boost your true wealth.
Hello, it is Crystal Arnold here with you today, founder of Money Morphosis and your hostess for the Money Wise Women Show. So if you're like me, you may have been around a lot of conversations that people have around empowerment and affirmations and what's kind of been deemed new age conversations. Of course, that means different things to everyone. But what I find is often in these conversations, there aren't real, definitions to the language that people are using, and they're kind of casually throwing around feel-good terms that honestly can have limited impacts when people are not addressing, for example, the shadow aspect and the challenging beliefs and behaviors. So a lot of people talk about things like intuition and authenticity. There is sometimes a deeper understanding that is needed to really access these key ideas in our daily life. And that's why I am so excited to have Amy Lombardo on our show today. I knew from the first time I talked with her, she has some key wisdom and insight that is truly unique, and she has helped so many people to really step into their own leadership potential. And she is truly a bright light. So Amy is a strategic coach for game changers, socially conscious entrepreneurs and visionaries. And Amy has been pioneering breakthrough innovations in personal growth programming since 2000. Her work has reached international bounds with her customized programs serving everyone from women activists in third world countries, high-end corporate CEOs, universities, nonprofit institutions, and top celebrities and philanthropists in New York City and Los Angeles. So she comes armed with an Ivy League education, a master's in rhetoric, as well as certifications in yoga and empowerment coaching. And she has over 15 years' experience as a spiritually minded entrepreneur herself. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation today because Amy blends ancient wisdom with modern business savvy and leadership techniques to really deliver top-notch, multidisciplinary offerings that are both heartfelt and incredibly powerfully practical. And so, if you want to learn more about today's guest, her website is AmyLombardo.com, Amy Lombardo. And so, Amy, I would like to welcome you to the show and begin with hearing a little bit from you about what really excites you most about your work in the world, and in particular with women.
Thank you, Crystal. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really honored to be your guest today. In terms of what excites me most about the work I do, feel like one of the things that I get, and people who do similar work to what I do get to have the benefit of, is I'm constantly surrounded by people, my clients, who are actively seeking to embody more of their full self. And in a world where it's easy to be inundated with negativity and cynicism and skepticism and all the news out there, the majority of it can be quite negative the way it's framed, my day gets filled with the opposite. I'm filled with people who are seeking that next edge of their own personal evolution. And just like other things, like anxiety are contagious, so too can optimism be contagious. And the desire to give what the yearning in your heart is a voice, that is contagious as well. So with my work, I get to really be in the heart of what I feel is the edge of our next evolution, not only as individuals, but as a society. And that obviously not only is deeply inspiring, but it keeps me real to my own personal edge as well. So it's kind of this hidden secret of being a coach in this arena, that I get to really constantly be living in that space.
Yeah, it is. I too am amazed at how many people really have these incredible gifts and valuable insights to really bring forth to contribute to a better humanity. And I see that like amplified more and more, that desire for people to have a meaningful contribution, to really prosper and be able to cooperate with others and you know, get the support from coaches like you. And really, so we are able to be more of ourselves and to really move through the challenges with more grace. And
indeed.
I'm curious.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm curious, because you have worked with so many diverse people. What do you see that gets in the way of people finding success?
Well, I think true success really requires connection to inner self. And so, like, without that connection to inner self, we're more easily subject to other people's definition of success. So whether that's our parents or our society or our spouse or whatever it happens to be, if we're not really in a clear relationship with ourself, with our inner voice, with our intuition, we're much more susceptible to adopt what's being told to us and be in a more of a reactive place. I also think, unfortunately, we're often sold a fairy tale a lot of the time. So what I mean by that is that even in this wellness arena, we'll call it, there's a lot of talk about following your passion or following your truth, and then your job or your career will be great. And I think what gets left out of that oversimplification is that following your passion or what you deem is going to be successful for you, it's not all blissful. You know, following your passion means going back again and again, probably making lots of mistakes because you're authentically living on your edge when you're following your passion. But we get inundated with these get-rich-quick schemes, with these ideas that following your passion looks like, a person who's working 4 hours a week and spending the rest of their time living off the land with having large amounts of passive income streams and things like that. And whereas those things may be possible, I think if we do a lot of marketing or selling that really promotes that fairy tale approach, it not only dissuades people from really owning the true vulnerability of what it means to follow your passion and your path to success, but it makes them feel bad if it doesn't come easily to them. So there's this overemphasis on what success is supposed to look like on the outside. And there's also this overemphasis that it's going to be all joy and fun. But most people I know that who feel they're living success on their terms, have worked for it, have looked, and I don't necessarily mean they put in the hard work. I don't mean it like that. I mean in the sense that they looked at the parts of their unconscious that they hadn't really fully understood yet. They were willing to be vulnerable. They were willing to take risks. They were willing to make mistakes. They were willing to go where it was scary. And we're not really given that understanding when we seek success at the beginning, that those are some of the things that we need to do. So it's this idea that I believe in, that any professional growth we have has to rest on a foundation, a strong foundation of personal growth and self-inquiry, because anything that we do in our professional realm is going to be based on that inner truth. And if we're not doing that work, you are going to be susceptible to some of those pitfalls of defining success on other people's terms.
Mm. Yeah, I especially see that in the, you know, ever since that movie, That Secret, came out, and there was so much hype around the manifesting the money, and, you know, I feel like it really did actually shame a lot of people who were genuinely struggling and kind of overlooked the very real economic challenges in our country, the difficulties of maybe getting into school debt at a young age. And I love just that really both practical and being willing to really look at the challenging things and be vulnerable, right? And reach out and be like, I need help with this, and really have the support we need.
Definitely. So, and not being willing or not being afraid to, you know, what our society might call failing. I often will tell my clients that, you know, before Thomas Edison made a light bulb, he made 1,000 not light bulbs. And there's usually a long road paved with many mistakes or missteps before one hits that place of success. And I wish that maybe as a society and as a culture, we promoted that aspect of the path to success a little bit more, rather than just, you know, the end goal of it's going to look like happy, happy, joy, joy, which I think can shame people and it can feel disheartening. And it really overemphasizes what it looks like on the outside as opposed to what it's feeling on the inside.
Hmm. Yeah, and it can be so challenging to be authentic and to like show up with our struggles and with all of our humanness. So I'm wondering, like, why would we want to choose this more challenging path of being authentic?
Not necessarily. I feel like that's why it doesn't make it as juicy marketing material, because if we were to really say what authenticity involves, it requires a deep commitment to self and in ways that maybe don't look so glamorous on the outside. But, you know, it's hard. If we were to really be honest with ourselves about what authenticity involves, it means you're going to have to feel your feelings, even the ones that you don't really like. It means you're going to have to consciously look at your unconscious. It's going to mean you're going to have to give up the blame game and any ways that you might hide behind your story that you tell yourself about yourself. It's going to mean making mistakes, being vulnerable, and being prepared for the possibility that you might be disappointed or that you might disappoint others. And so when you think of that, as you said, like, why would we choose this path anyway if it's going to come with all that price tag, if you will? And for me, I think authenticity is really the key to any success, however one defines it, because it really deconstructs the habituated self and it helps us find out who we really are. So it's not like living the idea of who you think you are or should be, but it's being who you really are. And so that's a very different way to live. And when we're in a really truthful place like that, to me, it's the place where we actually learn how to develop humility and kindness and compassion to ourselves and others. Because if we're living in true authenticity, in our truth, that's where we're really accepting ourselves. And that's where we feel our yearning, true connection. I mean, a lot of us can see that there's now almost on an epidemic level isolation. And it's ironic because we have more ways to connect with people than other technology-wise. But even in some of my clients that would be deemed uber successful, according to the outside definition of successful, they have money, lots of money, they have perfect marriages and all the things that one would think is success. But a lot of times I see there's a lot of isolation there. So I really believe the key to true sense of feeling success is when you are really giving that yearning in your heart a true place to be accessed in the world. And if we're doing that, it's a catalyst for not only individual transformation, but collective transformation. You know, if we really were to put authenticity as our bottom line, as opposed to finances or outward appearance or whatever happens to be one's definition of success, if we really put authenticity as the bottom line, we couldn't help but impact each other with a deeper sense of our own inner wisdoms. And a lot of those inner wisdoms, I think they get masked because we're prioritizing these outer realms.
Oh, so well put. So true. There really is so much suffering that's hidden, and people are feeling very isolated. So I'm curious, you know, do you have any tools that people could use to start being more authentic?
Yeah, definitely. One for me, you know, to your point in the intro, I really love dealing in this realm of the esoteric, taking words like authenticity and intuition and really, really getting clear for myself, what does that mean? When I'm living authentic, what does that mean? So for me, defining authenticity is the first place you need to start when you think about the tools to become more authentic. So I created this definition, really created for myself, and I found it to be useful, so I started to share it with others. I describe it as the four A's of authenticity. And the first A is awareness. I know who I am. So if we were to break that into a tool for your own authenticity, to know who you are, you have to commit to a regular practice of self-inquiry. That could be meditation, journaling, yoga practice, whatever one's spiritual practice is. But we have to really have a sense of knowing who we are. And that also means knowing our patterns, knowing the things we don't know about ourselves, our unconsciousness. And that self-inquiry has to be of utmost importance, kind of what I said before, that the foundation is personal growth and self-inquiry. That's the first A of authenticity. The second A is alignment. I know what I believe in, and I align with those values. So if I were to give people a tool to get in alignment with this A of authenticity, I would ask them if they could name the top five values that they aim to live by. So many people know this exercise is finding your core values exercise. A lot of times people say, oh, I know what my values are, and then you ask them, and it actually becomes readily apparent that they're not as clear on it as they thought. And then even when they list what they think their values are, I always encourage the client to say, okay, describe to me how you're going to act, think, and what your life's going to look like when that value is really owned. So I take it that next layer and I have people really flesh out, okay, if my value is love, this is how I'm going to know I'm acting in alignment with that value. I'm going to speak like this, I'm going to think like this, and these are the types of actions I'll be taking. So that's the second A of authenticity, alignment. The third A is action. I act from my inner compass and bring my truth to the world. So if I know what those five values are, now my job is in the heat of the moment, when I'm triggered or when things are, it's easier to go into patterns or habits, I have to press up, how would I act in this moment if I was acting in alignment with my values? That's where authenticity really, where the rubber hits the road, because it's not just a thing on a paper anymore that I wrote or in my journal. It becomes an actual guiding tool for how I behave in my interactions day to day. The fourth A, because it'd be tempting to stop right there, but the fourth A is what I call allow. I allow myself to be changed by the journey and continue my personal evolution. So if I were to tell people a tool for allowing, stay curious, make no assumptions, and actually desire to be changed. So if I'm actually going out in the world fully with my authentic self, I'm aware of who I am, I'm aligning with my values. I'm acting for my values. I allow myself to be changed by the world that I live in because I don't live in a vacuum. So as I stand in my truth and I interact my truth with the world, what happens? Allowing myself to be fully in that process of evolution, that's where the final piece of authenticity comes in. So I really encourage people to think about where upon those four A's are they falling short or could get more clarity to really be owning their authenticity.
Oh, that is so brilliant. I love how you broke it down there. And right, really where it can be authentic with ourselves, by ourselves, and then we can engage in the world from that place. And, you know, we can all think of successful, business people who are feminine leaders who are clearly authentic. I mean, some of the most powerful teachers that I've been exposed to, you know, they are just so present and willing to share. It's not like a performance for people. It's just so real and heartfelt, and just feel like for all of us that coming from that authenticity naturally leads to greater prosperity because people are really recognizing the way that we are being, and which is so much powerful than even our looks and, you know, the words. People really do sense where we're coming from. You know, and that really brings me, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to riff off that because it's a really beautiful point that, I think when we're in the presence of a leader, especially a woman leader, because women have so many projections put on them about how to behave, especially in leadership roles. So when we're in the presence of a feminine leader, a female leader who is owning her authenticity, it instantly creates a feeling of safety for people to be who they are. And that, I mean, that is so huge because that's where we're going to really connect with each other. And that's also where we're going to see that, okay, we don't have to buy into how, no matter how loud the noises around us are telling us we have to be this way. All it does is takes a choice, a personal inner choice to say, I'm going to align with what I know to be true inside. And by doing that, it's going to allow me to connect with others, not through some idea of what the perfect female leader should look like, but actually through my imperfections, through my humanity, through my, I'm a leader and I still have a lot of questions. I'm a leader and I'm still a student on the path. That's going to show people that it's our imperfections is where we connect, not through this projection or this idea of I need to look like this in order for people to buy into the fact that I could actually be a leader. So when we do that, it's key. It's like magnetism. When you're authentic as a leader, the prosperity will come because people will really see the rarity of that deep commitment to self that you're expressing.
Yeah, and the power of, you know, loving and caring for ourselves deeply, and how often as women we're focused on the needs of others, and like the first A you mentioned, like encouraging people to take that time daily to love and connect with yourself and move from that place of valuing yourself.
Definitely. It'd be a different world if we were doing that.
So true. So let's take a short break here from our sponsor. And when we get back, I'd love to talk some more about intuition and what it is and what it's not, and how people can really tap into that power of intuition.
Great.
All right.
Maybe you are like one young mother and entrepreneur named Marie. She was never taught the basics of managing her money. She finally got some training through www.discoveryourtruewealth.com to manage her finances. Marie's cake bakery was expanding, yet she was embarrassed about her financial ignorance. She was discouraged, and every late fee felt like a punch in the gut. Once she learned basic bookkeeping techniques, she was able to prioritize her expenses and pay off her debt more quickly. Marie easily trimmed $200 off her expenses in the first month of taking the training. Like Marie, you can have your cake and eat it too. Visit www.discoveryourtruewealth.com to register for free video training to eliminate some of the money leaks in your life. You will get a greater sense of clarity and confidence.
Great. So we are back with Amy Lombardo. And, you know, I totally see how authenticity is so intimately connected with our intuition, because it really is, you know, this tool that we have, our intuition. And so often it's like discounted, like it's not important. Oh, that's just a feeling. And especially being women, you know, everyone can be and is intuitive, and yet there is often just so our rational mind wants us to think that that power of our heart and our gut knowing is not as reliable as our mind and figuring things out. And so just wanted to hear about how you define intuition and what is it, what is it not?
Mm-hmm. So when I look at words, whether authenticity or intuition, I often will make a Pratt & Root of the word, because it will tell me information about its origin that might give me some insight. And when I look at the Latin root of intuition, tuere, it means to teach. But if you put the IN letters in front of it, it means not. So it's learning without instruction, which is a really neat way to think about it. It's knowing without knowing why you know. It's when your soul functions spontaneously. It's your intuition is your capacity for direct knowledge, immediate insight without observation or reason. It's often rapid. It's effortless. It's perception-like. It's not like deliberate thinking which tends to be more reason-based and critical and analytical. It doesn't happen like that. It can't be reduced to intellect, so that's why, of course, it gets so frustrating for our highly intellectually-based world. The intellect can feel your intuition, but it can't explain it. And so the best way I can describe it, it's like a higher reality, the intuition, can penetrate a lower reality of the intellect, but the lower reality, intellect, cannot penetrate the higher. So if we're trying to understand it or describe it or explain it through intuition, it's not going to work that way. It's sometimes referred to as the superconscious, whereas the intellect would be considered the conscious. And then our instincts, like your lungs moving to breathe, that would be your unconscious. It's like your automatic pilot stuff. So intuition is definitely part of a mysterious realm, but it's important to also know it's not wishful thinking. And it's also not fear, and what we can talk about those a little bit later, I imagine, because sometimes that if we're not practiced with understanding how to connect with our intuition, we might mistake wishful thinking or fear-based thinking as intuition when it's really actually still coming from intellect.
Yeah, so I am curious about that. You know, how can people tell the difference between intuition and fear?
Yeah, it's such a good question. One I get a lot because, you know, it's not something you think about, but until after the fact when maybe you listened to a wishful thinking voice or a fear voice and thought it was mistakenly your intuition and found out after the fact. But if you break it down, fear or wishful thinking, they're going to be emotionally charged. They usually will have high drama and a story around it. So fear will likely pull you either into the past, you're afraid something might happen again, so you act in certain ways, or it might take you into the future, like I fear something might happen in the future, so I'm going to do X, Y, Z. Wishful thinking will inevitably pull you into wishfully thinking about how life's going to unfold if you do X, Y, Z. So there's stories there. Intuition might have nerves and excitement and even a little giddiness sometimes, but when it first speaks to you, there's no story. It's less traumatic. It's clear. It's almost detached. It's like it's coming from a witness in your mind rather than from some part of your ego. And that's one big distinction between those three. Intuition also tends to feel more expansive. A lot of times when people have intuition, there's a breathability that comes into the equation that wasn't there before. Fear will be more rigid, contracted. Now, wishful thinking could feel expansive, but it's not a grounded expansive. It's kind of like airy, flighty almost, whereas intuition will feel expansive, but it can drop like a pebble in a pond. You know, a lot of times when you have an intuition, it's like, boom, it drops in your mind. You don't understand why, but you're just like, I got to do this. So it's expansive, but there's like a heft to it that's not there with wishful thinking. And finally, intuition will not involve put down. Press you, it won't thwart you. Fear will be divisive. It'll have, you know, either or thinking a lot of times. Wishful thinking will feel a whole lot like attachment. You'll like really have a sense of your ego being attached to it. As many of us know with intuition, you may have attachment or aversion with intuition. In other words, you may like what your intuition says, and sometimes you may not like what it says. But it, beyond that attachment or aversion feeling, intuition definitely has this sense of this is truth. And you don't really get that with the other two so much.
Hmm. So would you say that everyone can be intuitive?
Yes, I would. It's kind of like your intuition, it's fully intact. It's not something you have to go to the drugstore and buy. And it's not like, well, if you do 10 handstands a day and meditate for an hour every morning, you're going to have it. We all have it. It's like a muscle, though. And if we don't use it, it may be a very weak muscle for you. So we can talk a little bit more about how to attune to it, but this idea that, oh, I'm just not intuitive, or like that's not how I'm wired, you may not have as big an inclination towards it. Maybe your makeup is such that you have to make a more deliberate effort to connect to it, but everybody has the capacity for intuition, just like everybody has the capacity for intellect and for instinct. And so it's really important that any stories we're telling ourselves that, oh, I'm just not intuitive or I'm not like that, those aren't really helpful in terms of creating an opportunity for us to get stronger in this muscle. So we want to put those stories aside.
Hmm. Yeah, this is so crucial, I feel like, for people to really acknowledge these capacities and really see the power of intuition and learn to trust it. You know, I can really imagine that if people do it from a playful place of, you know, trying it out with small things and seeing what happens and not like trying to do, should I marry this guy I just met kind of intuition, you know, like taking some small fun steps with it. Do you have more to say about how people could attune to their intuition?
Yeah, well, you definitely hit on something there. It's funny, I think a vast majority of us, we may have this relationship with our intuition that's kind of haphazard. And so what I mean by that is something bad is happening in our life or we're confronted with a big decision. And then all of a sudden we start magically taking up this prayer or meditation saying, okay, I'm just going to reach into my intuition and find the answer without having any relationship, a meaningful relationship with our intuition before that. So it's possible that if that's how you do it, you kind of drop in only on occasion. It's possible that you're more likely to confuse the fear-based thinking or the wishful thinking with the intuitive voice. So the number one thing one could do to attune more to their intuition is they need to make a deliberate relationship with it. They need to create space in their life to connect with reverence to their intuition, in my opinion, every day. So even if it's like 1-2 minutes in the morning where you close your eyes, you deep breathe, and you ask for guidance, it could be as simple and as basic as that. You could even do it in the shower, so you don't even have to create extra time if you don't want to. But that's the number one thing, is you really need to create this idea of like, okay, I know that I have this muscle, but just like I might go to the gym and work out, I have to work this muscle out. So I have to acknowledge that I have it, and I have to let it know that I'm here and I'm listening. I'm ready to receive it. So we can't underestimate that. I used to have a teacher say that as much as we need spirit, spirit needs us. So we have to give it an invitation. We have to let it know we're ready to receive it. So that would be the number one thing that I would encourage for people wanting to attune more to their intuition. The other thing, which is a hard one for a lot of us, to be flexible. We have to let go of this deep need we have, or our ego has, to be right and have these very clear lines between right and wrong and a need to know. We have this tendency to prioritize knowing is important above everything else. And I think that that limits us in our ability to connect with our intuition. So if we can let go of that part of us that desperately wants to control everything and practice being in a more receptive state, that's going to be important for attuning as well to your intuition. That will, and to your point about the playfulness, I encourage people to stay curious. Invite the mystery in, live in the question. Be optimistic. Encourage that quality of expansiveness that anything is possible. Another really helpful tool is slowing down. You know, our world seems to go at hyper speed now, and that means it's usually, I notice that being fast usually goes with also being louder. We're having a lot more noise in our lives. So when we slow it down, we're making room to hear, feel, see, and experience the subtleties. And this could be just slowing it down in terms of a question, and you have what you think might be an intuitive hit and you're not sure. You could say, let me get back to you on that. You know, we don't have to go right away or text back right away or answer right away. Slowing it down could be a big part of this tuning in more to your intuition. I sometimes I'll call it simplify to amplify. So really just make it simple, like meditate, breathe, cultivate silence, whether it's silence in between spaces in the conversation or silence in your life, have an hour-free, tech-free day in every single day that you have. Those kinds of things are really important, and they're kind of an extinct species in our society. I remember reading a quote somewhere that we've learned to mind the gap so well, they've nearly disappeared. And the gap is important to mind, but it's also really important that it holds a purpose. You know, that's the yin energy. It's the space. It's what holds the container. So we need those spaces. Mind that gap and hold the presence. Connecting with non-linear things like poetry, music, drawing. A lot of those are spoken from the heart of intuition. Those can be things that also help keep us attuned to our own intuition inside.
I've also found how helpful it is to share our success stories and affirm with one another, you know, when our intuition is right on, and just really a part of building the muscle seems to be being willing to acknowledge the power of this intuitive capacity that we have. And whether it's in a women's group, or I know people who also do dream groups together, or, you know, like you just train coaches and ways that people can come together and really, you know, share our successes and our experiences with intuition and authenticity.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful point, because it's like if you thought of your intuition as an energy field, you know, everyone that you're in communication with, they also have their energy field of intuition. And, you know, that book, Lean In, I often wonder, like, what would it be like if we had a book about leaning into your intuition instead of leaning into all that stuff in the outside world? Like, what if we did that? What if we had leaning into our authenticity, leaning into our intuition? So I think when we do it, and when we talk about it, like you said, we start to take away this stigma that somehow it's woo-woo, because that's a part of our world that may continue to believe that, but it's not one we have to dial into. And there's a lot of arenas out there where intuition is taken seriously, and we don't have to necessarily announce it to the world, but there's people you can feel into where if you acknowledge it with them, there's a sense of, okay, I'm not in this alone. This is real. This is actually a kind of wisdom that I'm creating space for. And if I share it with like-minded souls who also believe in it, we create a stronger energetic field to hold and receive those messages.
Well put. Right? We've all had that moment when we're like picking up the phone to call someone and they call and then we dismiss it as some coincidence. And when we can actually acknowledge, oh, that's a synchronicity, you know, and just acknowledge that invisible field of intelligence that really does connect us all, right?
Yeah. It's like a willingness to acknowledge the mystery. And I, for one, would much rather live in the world where we acknowledge we are limited in our capacity to know everything than to assume I know it all. Because if I assume I know it all or can control it all, I am basically shutting the door on creativity. But if I open it up and say, you know what, there's a lot, probably the majority out there that I don't know. And if I cannot be scared by that, but just stay in the space of it and say, okay, I'm here, I'm ready to receive that support, it opens me up for grace to move through me, or whatever word you like to use for it. But every time before I do anything related to work, I will have a moment before I begin where I'll close my eyes and I'll take a receptive posture with my palms out, my feet on the ground, and I'll ask for guidance, for grace to flow through me. Because then what it does, back to our point from before with authenticity, it opens me up to right humility, being in the space that this is not about my ego. It's not even about me becoming, quote-unquote, more successful or prosperous. It's about something larger, and for me, that something larger is to be in service, and that when I do that, inevitably, my success, my prosperity has been met because I've made it about something much bigger than just my ego's limited desire. And that's such a key component, and why I think when you can prioritize understanding what intuition and authenticity mean for you, you're not going to find a better context to set the stage for ongoing prosperity and abundance in your own life, but in everybody's life that you touch as well.
Yeah, I can really feel that in you, why you are such a powerful feminine leader. I love the simplicity of taking that moment. That's really, I really feel the power of that. Myself too, and just like you said, being willing to slow down and invite the mystery to move through us and get out of our own way. So I'm curious, you know, you've worked with so many groups of women in different circumstances. If you would like to share about the power of doing transformational group within a group of women.
Yes, it's true. I've worked with a lot of different groups, and at first they might seem like they're very unrelated. I've worked with, for example, women in rural villages in Africa who have very limited access to internet or anything of that nature, but are leaders on the ground. And so I've worked with them in empowerment techniques to build women collectives to, for example, not just provide them with a microfinance. Like sometimes you'll hear about women receiving livestock as of economic finance in their culture where they can then provide for their family. But then they're not given the internal tools on how to hold that. Because you can imagine if you've lived in a society where you have never had finances or a source of income and all of a sudden you have it, but that can bring up a lot of internal stuff, a lot of fears, a lot of concerns and uncertainties. So the work I do is try to empower people on the inner landscape to give them the support they need to actualize what they want to on the outer landscape. And so I've worked with groups like that, but then I've also worked with high-end philanthropists stateside who are looking to pool their resources together in a way to create the biggest bang for their buck for helping other women. And it's been fascinating to me to see that no matter the background, whether that's economic disparity or cultural disparity or ethnicity, no matter the background, no matter how different we appear on the outside, there are some universal principles that if we can root into on the inside, we can get in touch with our natural feminine power. And outside of just the individual feminine power, there's this real need, and it's tied a lot into the work I do, of reigniting the sisterhood. Because one of the ways I think we've been kept small in our world is women have been taught to compete with one another and to even understand ourselves in relation to other women by either putting it below them. So we're always comparing and competing. And we have to be able to pull back from that pattern that we've been taught to remember, no, my success and her success are intimately tied together. And if I can remember that and not see her as something to compare myself with or to compete against, together we can do so much more than we can do alone. So I try to really support people in not only finding their own inner voice, but then seeing how that doesn't have to be threatened or in a power over dynamic with another woman, but that we can coexist, co-create, and collaborate in ways that are going to take us to a new level of consciousness as a society.
Hmm. Wow, what a powerful perspective. I love just your willingness to find those universal principles and really support people towards leveraging their time and their relationships to like make the impact they want to in the world. And we really do need each other. That's why I also love doing group facilitation. I find there is something that's amplified in a field of people who are there for a similar purpose of being vulnerable and healing, exploring, like creating that safe space, especially around money and finances, just allows people to open up and really bust through the shame and the guilt and all the ways they've been hiding from themselves, and like show their humanness to connect more deeply with others and their own genius. And I just find there's something amazing that happens in groups that isn't as accessible alone or with one person.
For sure. You know, and I like to have it go, I like to expand people's definition of how we can support. Like a lot of times, with women leaders, I will often encourage them to not only have a mentor, so surround yourself with people that inspire you and that you want to learn to embody more of the principles that they're embodying, because a lot of us understand that. We need role models. But I also encourage women leaders to also make a pact with themselves that for every mentor I have, I'm also going to mentor someone who's maybe on the same path, but maybe not as far along as I am, and I see that I have something that can support her. I can't tell you how much I've gotten out of those relationships as well, because there's something that happens when you put yourself in the seat of serving another woman where you gain your own confidence. You gain your own understanding of your masterfulness and your powers and your abilities that you don't necessarily see unless you're in that mentorship role. And, of course, you're supporting her and amplifying her capacity to help others in the world. So I really encourage people to look at it both ways and keep it flowing in both directions. And that can also be done in, you know, in the programs that you offer or the work that you do, choosing certain charities that you support through that work. You know, really thinking out of the box of the different ways you can support other women. For example, I try to hire vendors that are women-owned businesses, and that then allows me to really support the values that I want to be a stand for and really run my business from those values as opposed to just thinking of them as pie-in-the-sky thoughts or things that I'll tell other people to do but then won't do myself.
Mm-hmm. So important. Would you like to tell listeners more about you will be on as a guest faculty just in our fall virtual tea party called Discover Your True Wealth for Women? And would love to hear about what you will be offering around feminine leadership and empowerment.
For sure. Well, you're a very good example of what I'm talking about, you know, really bringing together women who are acting in the same arena and pulling us all into a collective with, in this case, a virtual tea party to really help women discover what wealth means on their terms, which is part of course, this whole conversation about success. And for me, when you look at wealth, you can't not look at leadership. Because, as I said before, there's this idea of leadership is walking your talk, and how are you being with your wealth out in the world? You can teach other women about that. So one of the things I want to dissect in my section of the program that we do is looking at the paradoxes that one has to hold when they are in the seat of the leader. So if we think of paradoxes, you know, the old paradigm is there's a right way to do this and a wrong way to do this. And I believe we're moving to reality that goes beyond the right and the wrong and instead looks at the both and. Where's the both and opportunity in the areas that we're working so that we can look at understanding and leveraging the complexities that exist in our society as opposed to pretending they're not there and trying to fit them nicely into boxes. I think as leaders, we have to take the front edge on understanding how to showcase and demonstrate how one can use complexities in our society and our relationships as a means to leverage our own success and capacities to help others.
Wow. I just love your perspective. There is so much there to soak in. I'm just amazed at how you also demonstrate what that leadership is, and is there anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think an important thing to keep in mind, certainly for the online program that we'll all be doing together, that when we can get, because I think as evidenced by some of what we talked about today, I can get really heady with the definitions and the philosophies of things. But I think one of the other things I'm so excited about in your offering that we're going to be doing this fall is that it brings back the sense of community and lightness that women inherently have as part of their being. I grew up in a big family of women. I have four sisters. My mom had six sisters. We have an endless amount of cousins, the majority of which are women. So often you can go to a family reunion of ours and close your eyes and hear all these high-pitched voices. But there's this buzz that happens when women get together. Possibility and creativity happens. And I love doing things where women in leadership roles and in empowered roles come together, not only to go deep and get serious, but also just to celebrate and be light, because that's part of the antidote to what I was talking about before of removing the comparison and the competitiveness that we're constantly taught to have, that we can create arenas where women celebrate each other, where they support each other. And I think that's what we'll also be doing in the program that you'll be offering this fall. And one of the reasons I'm excited to be part of it is that we can support each other in our successes, and then everybody benefits. So that's another component that I'm really looking forward to.
Me too. It's so true. And that's why I chose to call it a tea party. It's like, oh, that feeling of, you know, being nourished and enjoying sisters and good conversation and just that kind of funness that's not often associated with talking about money. And you often imagine going into some sterile bank and sitting in a room with some judgmental old man who's going to try and tell you what to do with your money. And it's like, well, there's another way to empower ourselves around our finances and to really, like you said, benefit from sharing and celebrating the successes of the other women and being willing to, you know, really put into practice these tools and be able to support each other, because it can be easy to get inspired and sign up for a free webinar, but then being willing to commit to ourselves, to invest in ourselves, to do the ongoing work, to have that community is so important. You know, you've probably experienced it can often be easier to follow through when we have a commitment to another person, and we often prioritize those external commitments for whatever reason. But being, having that support of the group to really, I really see people and a renewed love of themselves and their ability to share their incredible value with the world through people doing this course with us.
Yeah, and I truly feel that it's also an arena where we can practice being vulnerable with each other. Because money and wealth, there's so much shame so many of us have around the stories we tell ourselves about our wealth or our lack thereof or however we deem it is happening in our life. And there's a lot of, for everyone, but certainly for women, there's a lot of this problem of self-worth getting attached to how much we have in our bank account or don't have in our bank account. So this is an arena where we can pull away those things that keep us separate about the money conversation and actually show that, okay, as I said before, we can connect to each other through our imperfections here. And then we can choose how we want to define how to feel about our wealth and abundance. And I think that means the conversation even going far beyond just physical money alone, but abundance in support, abundance in self-acceptance, abundance in self-nourishment. So what I love about your course as well is it's does similar to what I do. There's brass tack stuff in it about how to, you know, make things work, but there's also an understanding about what's the feeling of wealth. How does that feel inside you? What does abundance feel like to you? Because that's really when we're going to feel abundant, when we're in touch with that, not with what the number says in the bank. It'd be an arena where we can actualize and practice being vulnerable, tearing down those old things that we tell ourselves about money to keep us small, and moving into a place where the conversation changes to really looking at abundance in a much larger context than just the physical wealth of money.
Mm. Yeah, it's like a revolutionary act to like be willing to do this, to claim our own value, to practice in a safe place having conversations about money so that we can take that and, you know, ask for what we feel our worth is and ask for the raise or discuss finances in a new way with our partners and be more comfortable in our own skin and really know our own value in a deeper, more embodied way. And I really have seen this again and again in my workshops, as you probably have in your work, just that willingness to show up and connect really does allow incredible, you know, some may call them miracles, but incredible transformation to happen. Just a few more seconds if you'd like to say any closing words and share your website again.
Sure. Well, I just want to thank you and offer my gratitude to you for creating this space today to have this conversation. I really feel conversations like this need to be happening more often, so I'm very grateful. And anyone who's interested in learning more about my work, they can go to amylombardo.com, and I will be happy to connect with them and reach out and support them however I can. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you, Crystal.
Great. Thank you so much, Amy.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, the biggest compliment you can give us is to subscribe to the show and rate and review our podcast at iTunes. Be sure to visit www.moneymorphosis.com. That's money-morphosis.com to join the growing community of empowered women who are dedicated to creating the true wealth they deserve.